Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and moved, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everyone. This is your host, Jason Staples, once again. Before we get started, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. We've also got a Facebook page. You can find us at the Unconquered Podcast. Just do a search on Facebook for the Unconquered Podcast. And don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or through most podcast managers. I'm not exactly sure which ones we're on at this point and which ones we're not, but go ahead and let me know what ones this podcast is not on, and I'll do what I can to go ahead and get that ready for you. You can also listen to us via the Seminole Sports Radio app, available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace, or online at Seminole Sports Radio through the vSporto network. And of course, if you're enjoying this podcast, please rate us on iTunes. 5-star ratings help a bunch. Tell a friend. Share us on social media. The more listeners, the better. We're growing by leaps and bounds, and this has been a good season in that regard. Taking a nice step forward, and this is important to me, in part not just because it's my show, it's something that I want to succeed and do well, but also because there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of stuff in terms of scheme and in terms of all sorts of things where there are people who don't know some of the stuff that's out there, and getting more information out there that is legitimate and educated in that regard is important to me, and I think for most of the listeners of this show, that's true as well. So let's go ahead and continue to spread the wealth, spread some understanding of what's actually going on, and go ahead and share this where you can. In any case, let's go ahead and get to it. This is our bye week episode. Looking a little bit at the Wake Forest game as well, since there was a little bit of since I didn't do a full show on that, not a whole lot really to talk about in that game. It was what it was. It was a game after a very physical game against Miami, one of the most physical games I've seen all season, actually, between Florida State and Miami. Both of those teams came out of that pretty banged up, pretty emotionally spent. You could see that with what's happened to Miami, with apparently, what's most likely going to be two losses here in a row, North Carolina and Virginia Tech. They're just a banged up, beaten up football team. Florida State also is pretty banged up coming out of that. And emotionally, it's difficult to get up week after week. And that's the difference between the quality programs where you're good enough that even when you don't get up for the game, even when you aren't operating on all cylinders, you're able to win games because you are the better team and you're better by enough that your C game wins. And that really is what this game was against Wake Forest. It was Florida State's C-minus game. I think at least on offense, and the defense maybe played a little better than that, but a game that that they were able to win in spite of not really being at their best and executing as well as I think certainly the coaching staff would like and fans would like to see as well. Now, defensively, the defense was basically what it has been, but they played a really bad offense. They were pretty decent, but there were still too many small breakdowns that against a team like Clemson are going to be a problem. This Wake Forest team had no one who could scare you down the field. There's just nothing that they could do. They could try to run the football a little bit. Their best stuff was getting the quarterback out of the pocket and getting some running stuff, which is, of course, concerning if you're going into the next game playing against Deshaun Watson. But ultimately, the defense continues to grow a little bit. I do think some of the young guys are bringing some important fresh blood, fresh life to this defense, and that's been an important factor in as this defense is starting to look a little bit revitalized. Obviously, again, not playing as good a competition, but Brian Burns has continued to be a good player for them out there. Taylor is doing his thing. Kyle Myers is looking like he's going to be a pretty good player at Florida State, continuing to basically be at least assignment sound in the star position, which Florida State just couldn't get from Marcus Lewis there, who certainly has a physical talent. And then Dontavius Jackson at the linebacker position also doing some good work there. But, you know, I think maybe the biggest difference that I've seen in this defense is really twofold, and it's personnel-wise. Naughty's improvement on the inside has been noticeable as he's gotten healthier. And when he plays like that on the inside, this defense is very different because you can't just run between the tackles, and he compresses the pocket, and you know he's a difference maker on the inside when he plays like he has the last couple of weeks when he's healthy. And his improvement is going to be interesting going into the Clemson game if he's able to continue to improve and continue to be. I don't know how much healthier he can get, how far from healthy he has been, but if he's got more in the tank than what he's been showing coming out of the bye week even, then you know it'll be really interesting what he's able to do and what kind of havoc he's able to create against Clemson. Also, I think Ermin Lane just continues to be better than any of us would have expected at that safety position. He's picked it up and has been excellent. He's still a little bit lost here and there, but the thing is, he's not blowing assignments. He's been surprisingly assignment sound, and he's shown some really tremendous range. I mean, we always knew he was a good athlete and had length and had some speed, but how fluid and natural he's looked at that position has been a real surprise. I mean, Jimbo Fisher addressed that this week, that you know sometimes all it takes is a guy sort of losing one spot where he was trying and just it didn't quite work, and you know he just wasn't catching the football at the wide receiver position, and Fisher said maybe he was pressing too hard or whatever, but all of a sudden he goes to defensive back and plays free, and all of a sudden looks like a tremendous athlete, looks like a draft pick at that safety position as he continues to get some experience. So going to be interesting to see what Clemson does to try to take advantage of him being green back there, but he's been much more assignment sound and much more able to sort of break down what they're doing defensively than I expected, though they are still mostly playing man coverage. Now, they were playing mostly man on the boundary anyway in terms of this scheme, so that hasn't made a whole lot of difference from Tavarius McFadden's perspective, but for everybody else, it's made some difference. But you know they basically have been pretty simple, but that's going to probably have to be a little bit different against Clemson because of the running quarterback factor and their ability to create some mismatches. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do coming out of the bye week against Clemson. I mean, remember, Florida State's defense played as well against Clemson last year as anyone. They defended them better than Alabama did by quite a bit. It's going to be interesting to see at home in Doak Campbell what they're able to do, particularly now that safety spot looks like it at least has somebody who can compete there. And I'll be curious to see what Clemson does to try to test him a little bit in that regard. I do think that we saw a few times that underneath coverage on the inside, particularly in zone looks, is still a problem. I mean, this team misses Andrews in that money position because he was so quick to diagnose and get up under pass routes. And without Nate Andrews in there, they're just not that good in coverage in those sets. I mean, there was one gif that was going around around Twitter where initially people were blaming the scheme and blaming Kyle Myers for being so far off the ball. But the reality was that particular scheme was relying on the money position, which was where Westbrook was responsible for undercutting that. And he just wasn't there, wasn't in his proper position, basically got suckered by the inside slant in that case, which he has to pass off to the linebacker as soon as he recognizes an inside release and pick up whoever's coming in from the outside. And, you know, that's simple, basic pattern reading. I mean, you can teach that level of pattern reading at the high school level. Some high schools do. And it's just not Florida State's not good enough there at the linebackers right now and at the money roll. So you know that's something that needs to get a lot better over the course of the bye week, and we'll see what happens there. The offense against Wake Forest still struggling to finish drives. Again, they were able to move the football reasonably well. I mean, that's a good Wake Forest defense, but not a great one. Four turnovers is not acceptable in any game, obviously. And frankly, the offensive line and the tight ends and the running backs just didn't do a very good job in terms of the the pass protection, and Francois just taking too many hits, particularly on pass downs. When teams know he's going to throw it and they know he tends to hold on to it, they're coming after him, and they're able to they've been able to get to him, and that at this point really needs to be fixed before Florida State plays against a team that really comes after you in Clemson. But you know, ultimately, to me, the primary problem, you know, thinking back, reflecting on why Florida State continues to have trouble closing out drives, particularly in the first half, I think it's pretty simple, actually, and it's the result of a difficult combination. Basically, this is an offense that can't throw on passing downs, and that's obvious. If you look at the breakdown of passing down stats versus standard down stats for this game, Florida State was 15 to 21. That's 71% completion percentage for 11 yards per attempt on standard downs. Now that's inflated a little bit by the Hail Mary that wasn't at the end of the first half, but still, that's, you know, 8+ yards per pass on standard downs, which is perfectly fine. That's excellent. On standard downs, if there's any threat of the run, Florida State's been able to play action and do quite a bit in those contexts. And Francois has actually been decent, but it's on passing downs that they've been a problem. And you know, passing down stats are 7 for 16 plus 3 sacks, so that's really 7 of 19 for 86 yards minus whatever the sack yardage would be. 44% completion percentage plus the 3 sacks and 1 interception for 2.84 yards per attempt. That's really not very good, and that's not getting it done. And the problem is when you take that when you have that level of ineptness on passing downs, then you can't make up for mistakes. You have to be on schedule all the time. You have to stay ahead of the sticks or you're just not going to score. And that's the thing that, you know, when Florida State has been rolling in Fisher's offense, when they had Christian Ponder in 2009 in particular, when they had Jameis Winston, when they had even E.J. Manuel to some degree, when you've got really good quarterback play, one of the things that is that does, and you can notice this as a fan when you're watching the game, when it's third and long, you still have a sense that, okay, that, you know, we got a shot here. When you don't throw the football well on passing downs, there's a sense of almost desperation and a kind of like, oh, hopefully nothing, you know, hopefully they don't really screw this up when it's, say, 3rd and 7. When it was 3rd and 7 and Jameis Winston was the quarterback or Christian Ponder was the quarterback, you expected Florida State to get that. You know, about half the time, you're going to get 3rd and 7. Right now, when it's 3rd and 7, Florida State's not getting it. It's not even close. And that's been the real problem is that you know, you get one false starter, you get one tackle for a loss or something that throws you off schedule and it ends a drive. You get a dropped ball, whatever. It ends a drive because this team can't make up for it with success on passing downs. And that's been the primary problem is that they've combined a number of those little mistakes here and there where, you know, they get all, it forces them off schedule. And then for a combination of reasons, one of which is that Francois right now is not especially accurate. Another is that they don't have a ton of guys outside that really scare you in the passing game. Another is that they haven't protected well, and that I think is the biggest problem. That combined with some inaccuracy. I mean, there generally have been receivers open. They've created space. But what you've got to protect and you've got to be able to throw accurately, and they've not protected all that well on passing downs and they haven't thrown it accurately on passing downs. And so as a result, they have to be on schedule all the time. And you combine that with a relative lack of big plays, even in the standard down passing game, they're able to get, you know, 15 yards here and there, 20 yards, but they're not getting big chunk plays and they're certainly not getting long scoring plays. When you combine that, you're not going to end up scoring a bunch of points. You've got teams that can go bend, don't break on you because if you get behind schedule, you're in trouble, and they know it. That's been the problem with the Florida State offense to this point. So really, it's as simple as getting a little bit better in terms of being able to do something on passing downs, getting some options that you feel like you can at least have a chance to be reliable on passing downs. Now, if it were me, I've always been a back shoulder proponent for certain longer yarded situations. So if you got a bigger body receiver especially, then you put him on the outside and you go ahead and you back shoulder. I mean, you see Clemson do this with Mike Williams as their sort of bailout. And yeah, it's a bailout, but if you can't do other things, then I think that's ultimately one of your better options that you can give your guy. If you've got a matchup advantage, then you can give your guy a chance to you know, get the ball out of his hand quickly and give your big receiver or your, you know, dynamic receiver your best guy. And I think Rudolph can do this. I know Auden Tate should be able to do it. Down the line, they'll have some other guys that can do it. But I think that's one thing they can do. They've got to find ways, though, to create quicker and more comfortable throws on passing downs that Francois can complete in order to finish drives. That's going to be critical. And the other thing is finding ways to get some big plays. They've just not been, you know, teams have been able to keep things in front, and they've got to find ways to get some space and to stretch the defense a little bit. And again, a lot of that is Francois not throwing, and talk about this last week, Francois not being very accurate down the field on those bucket throws, on those deep throws. And it doesn't really matter at that point who you're throwing to. If you're not putting it in their zip code, he's got to find a way. Florida State's got to find a way to make sure that they can get some big plays and create some vertical plays in that regard. Now, I do think FSU is still doing a pretty good job of getting Francois out of the pocket, using his ability to throw on the run and his legs as a threat. It'll be interesting to see what they do there with Clemson. It'll be interesting to see how healthy he is against Clemson, to see whether or not they feel like they can continue to do that as much, because, you know, that's the other thing. Right now, Florida State has him and really nobody else, and it's hard to risk your guy, the one guy that you think you can trust at quarterback right now. It's hard to risk him, putting him up for more of a beating. Given the kind of beating that he's taking in the pocket, it's hard to justify putting him outside the pocket and putting him at risk there, when, you know, you've got nothing behind him, and when he's already banged up. So it'll be interesting to see how healthy he is coming out of the bye, and how much they continue to be willing to use his legs as a threat. They continue to need to do that, and they've been doing it. But you know, it'll be interesting to see moving forward. I think they're going to need to run him against Clemson to have a good shot to win that game. Now, in this game, I did want to see more Jacquez Patrick. I'm a little puzzled on why there's such a lack of rotation at that running back position. I do think the lack of a rotation there is hurting the offensive efficiency a little bit, because Cook is not quite as fresh as he would be otherwise. I think it would be better to have him fresher, particularly in the second half, and give Jacquez some more carries particularly in the second and third quarters, and letting Cook be more of a change of pace in certain cases, or I guess put it the other way, Patrick be a change of pace for Cook to soften that defense up a little bit in the middle of the game. And he's run really well when he's been in there. So I do think that he has earned more touches. And yes, that means taking some touches away from your best guy. But I think, again, making sure that your best guy is absolutely at his best when he does touch it is worth just a little bit more, given that Cook can make some of those big plays. Now, otherwise, you know, the real frustrating thing in this kind of game is this is a team that if you're able to get out to an early lead, you can play some younger guys. And this is a game where I think they wanted to play some guys like Keith Gavin in this game, but they didn't get enough of a lead to ultimately put those guys on the field all that much. And, you know, that's the frustrating thing. It doesn't help you to develop younger guys when you're not blowing teams out. Now, that ultimately does lead us into the second part of the show, where I'm going to take some question and answer. Had some pretty decent feedback on Twitter, asked for some questions from various people on Twitter to see what we would talk about here in the bye week. But I'm going to go ahead and answer those one by one here. First and foremost, let's see. Go through here. This is from Ryan Von Cannell. and I'm going to just go ahead and read this as it's stated. One, Jimbo's O outdated? ? Two, what coach changes would you like to see? Three, does FSU need to take advantage of French's run ability? I'm going to take those in reverse. First and foremost, yes, Florida State needs to continue to take advantage of Francois's rushing ability. They've been doing that, but you have to be judicious about what you do with that because you can't afford to lose that guy either. And with how banged up he is, you have to be careful on what kinds of runs you call. You have to do things like boots and other things where he's going to have a chance to get down if he's if it's not there. You can't really run him much between the tackles or anything else right now because he's so banged up and teams know it. So, and given what you have behind him, you can't afford to have him on the sideline. I think we saw that against Miami. So yes, but they have to be judicious about how they do it. You have to do enough of a quarterback run game to make sure that they have to honor his fakes and on the backside. And that's basically it. As far as number two, what coach changes would I like to see? Ultimately, it'll be interesting. I think I'm gonna withhold judgment on some of that until I see the second half of the year and whether or not this defensive staff ultimately reaches the Florida State defense and gets things corrected, particularly against Clemson. I think how they do against Clemson has a lot to say about what I actually think needs to happen. I do think that there are a couple changes that need to happen, one of which is that I would prefer there be a change made at the linebacker coach at the linebacking position, mostly because I've not seen all that good a development in terms of pattern reading underneath. And I think that's a really, really important thing, a really critical thing to what Florida State's doing, on defense. You can't run that defense unless those guys at the linebacker position are matching well and are reading quickly, and they're just not doing that very well. And if they do make a change at that linebacker coach, you know, that Florida State has a very good has a guy that had a lot of success coaching linebackers, particularly in that area before on the staff. And that's Charles Kelly, at which point, you know, I might want to see Charles Kelly move down to linebackers and bring in a really good defensive backs guy. We'll see what really needs to happen, I think, over the next couple games and see whether or not there's been enough progress that we can say, okay, this isn't all just been coaching or teaching, up to now, but, you know, it was a combination of things. I'll withhold judgment for now. Otherwise, I think that there also could be a couple other changes that might need to be made at the end of the year. But that one's the one that I would probably start with at this point. Number one, I'm going backwards here, is Jimbo Fisher's offense outdated? That's a very short answer. No. His offense isn't outdated. His offense is, as we've talked about on this show before, one of the most flexible offensive approaches in the game. And, you know, if you listen, it's 2016. If you go right now to look up the most points scored by any team in history, any college football team in history, and listen, teams are playing more games now. Most points scored in a season, 723 points by Florida State in 2013. That's Jimbo Fisher's offense in 2013 is the highest scoring offense in NCAA history, playing a 13-game season. Clemson last year with Deshaun Watson. So don't give me that this is, you got to have a Jameis Winston to do this. Clemson has a Deshaun Watson, and they played 14 games last year. They played 15 games last year. I'm sorry. They played 15 games, and they wound up scoring fewer points than Florida State did, as did Alabama last year, and so on. So this is the third season removed from that season, and things have not changed so much in 3 years that suddenly Fisher's offense is outdated. Now, there are a couple things that I think he can continue to tweak, continue to take more advantage of, but that's not wholesale changes to an offense. That's not a matter of an offense being outdated. It's just not outdated. Fisher was one of the first people to run the quarterback at quite a bit back when he was at LSU. They ran the quarterback with Matt Mock and with Flynn. You know, that those were Urban Meyer packages before Urban Meyer popularized them. That stuff's in Fisher's offense if he feels like that stuff is the stuff that they do best. So to some in that regard, no, it's certainly not outdated. All right, moving on to the next question. This is from Renegade Osceola at AMFK Knoll. Have any of FSU's younger wide receivers considered stooping or crouching when they walk so that they have a better chance of getting on the field? Okay, that's funny. That is funny. And it does bring in a myth that has been going around the Florida State fandom and some in the Florida State media for a while. This idea that Jimbo Fisher doesn't play the taller wide receivers or the bigger wide receivers, and that, you know, Florida State's just starting a bunch of midgets, and that Fisher needs to stop being stubborn and play the big guys, and you know, it's just Fisher's stubbornness and his preference that is the reason that that Florida State's starting a bunch of Smurfs. First of all, that's just not true. I mean, listen, I've talked to Fisher, and this goes back, you know, I've talked to Fisher about this stuff going back to 2007 when he first got to Florida State. I got the chance to really pick his brain about what he really likes and what, you know, what his ideals are on a lot of these things. And the idea that Fisher would prefer to play small wide receivers when he has big wide receivers who would be even an equivalent is laughable to me. It's just laughable. Fisher absolutely prefers size at the wide receiver position. And it's not, you don't have to just rely on my word for it to recognize that. You don't have to just take my word for it. There's proof of this. Since Jimbo Fisher came to Florida State in 2008 or 2007, his first recruiting class that he had significant to do with was 2008. Since that 2008 class, so between 2008 and the 2016 class, Florida State has signed 15 wide receivers who you could classify as big wide receivers. That is 6'2" plus area. You could kind of potentially fudge it on one of them because he's a bigger wide receiver. I tossed him in there even though he's probably about 6'1". But that's 15 big receivers and only 8 below 6'2", basically. So Florida State, since Jimbo Fisher arrived, has recruited twice as many big wide receivers, has signed twice as many big wide receivers as they have small wide receivers. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. Now, some of you probably don't have a good memory in terms of who these people are. But let's go through them. Corey Cerency, 6'5". Jarman Fortson, 6'3". Avis Comack, 6'4". Josh Gares, not very talented, but still 6'3" and a big body, which is why they signed him. Rodney Smith, 6'6". Willie Halstead, 6'3". Christian Green, 6'2". Kelvin Benjamin, 6'5". Isaiah Jones, 6'4". Pig Harrison, 6'2". Ermin Lane, see 6'3". Then Auden Tate, 6'5". And then Devontae Phillips, who's he's a little under 6'2", but I'm putting him in there because he's a 210-pounder, so he's a big receiver. He's not a fast guy. Certainly no Smurf. Then George Campbell, 6'4", and Keith Gavin, 6'3". Wow. So that's a pretty big group of receivers. I would venture to say that no team since Fisher's been at Florida State has signed a bigger group of wide receivers than Florida State has since Fisher started. of the guys that are smaller than that that Fisher has signed, Kenny Shaw, 6 foot, Greg Dent, 5'11", 6 foot, DeJoshua Johnson, who never made it on campus, Rashad Green, I don't think anybody's complaining about that signing, Marvin Bracey, who was signed more as a kick returner, but also as a top guy, but either way, a world-class sprinter, Kermit Whitfield, no questions asked about why he was signed. He was signed mostly as a return man, Bobo Wilson, and Travis Rudolph, who's still over 6 foot, but I'm not putting him in the big category. So that's 8 total, 2 of whom were world-class sprinters signed to be returners. So 6 receivers that were not signed because of their ability to basically be world-class guys in the return game under, you wouldn't classify as big. Only 6 since 2008 signed. And only 8 total if you count those world-class guys. Only 8 total under, say, 6'1". And the guys 6'2" and bigger, 15. So this idea that Fisher, can't deal with big receivers or whatever, that's just garbage. If Fisher had his druthers, I can tell you this. If Fisher had his way, his offense would be base too tight with 2 giant receivers outside those 2 tight guys to create all sorts of matchups all over the field. And he wants tight ends that are flexible enough that he can flex them, that he can make them into another wide receiver. A guy like Maven Saunders, he wants guys like that out there with some size, and then he wants big wide receivers outside of them. If he could put Kelvin Benjamin and Keith Gavin out there as the 2 wide receivers outside of 2 big tight ends, and then put a big back in the backfield, there's your base that Jimbo wants to run. Now, why has Florida State not run that? Well, first of all, they haven't been able to recruit to it yet. And you say, well, he's been here since 2008. Why hasn't he been able to do it? Well, you can't just sacrifice talent just to get size. And that's the issue. This is the same issue that came up with the myth about Rick Trickett preferring small linemen. That was never true. We dealt with it on this program to begin with. I had talked to Rick Trickett specifically about what he looked for in an offensive lineman, and then size was right up there. But the one thing that he said is he's not going to sacrifice the ability to actually move feet for size. He was not going to sign a guy that was 360 and couldn't move. What he wanted, he said, is he wants a 325-pound guy who can move like he's 280. But if the guy's 325 and moves like he's 340, then he's going to sign the 305-pounder, which makes sense. So, again, going back to this, Fisher initially couldn't get elite tight ends to put on the field to make it worth it until, and that's because of Florida State's history. Florida State didn't have the tight end history that Miami did. Those tight ends were going to Miami, they were going to Georgia, they were going to Alabama. They weren't going to Florida State. But he sold Nick O'Leary on it, and then only once O'Leary showed that Florida State would feature the tight end under Fisher was he able to start signing some other guys. And that's when you got Izzo and Saunders signed, and it takes a couple years to develop them, and now we're starting to see the payoff of that. Same thing in terms of receivers. There's only a handful of really giant receivers out there that are worth signing in any given year. And there are a number of big ones, and you go after the big ones that you can, you go after the giant ones that you can, but you can't necessarily attract them every year. So you sign what you can. And, if it's a choice between a 3-star, may or may not be a decent player who's 6'4", or Rashad Green, well, sometimes you're gonna have to take Rashad Green because he's going to be the better player. So that's the hard part about this is, it just takes time to get everything in place, and it has taken time for Fisher to get everything in place the way that he's wanted in terms of that. Now, why is Florida State now starting such small wide receivers? Well, that's pretty simple. It's because of failures in the 2012 and 2013 recruiting classes. It takes a while to get receivers ready to play. The wide receiver position is one where it just takes time. It takes time to develop. Those guys, you need to be able to develop guys at the wide receiver position. Very few guys come into college ready to play wide receiver as true freshmen. It's just not normal. It's not common. So if there's anything that this group, you know, these taller wide receivers, you know, the younger wide receivers need to do. It's not stooping or crouching when they walk, because I can tell you right now, if Jimbo Fisher has a flaw in terms of what he prefers, it's that he overvalues size. This is a guy, I mean, I've heard him say before, and I've quoted him on this podcast previously, talking about, you know, if you go to South Florida and you shake a tree, you know, a 5'9" guy that runs 4.4 falls out. You know, those guys are all over the place, and they're not the guys that you really target. He said, but you know, and another thing that, you know, I've heard him say a few times is, he's like, here's the thing. People forget, you know, people get all enamored. You know, they see a high school guy, they see him running away from people and making all these moves on film. And he's like, but what they forget, you know, this was, I remember going back, you know, when James Wilder Jr. was at Florida State. And he's like, you know, thing they forget is when that big guy has been leaning on you all game, it takes a toll. And, you know, he's all about this big guy thing. And, you know, the wide receivers and their ability to make space with their size, and, you know, the benefit of big wide receivers in terms of blocking and all of these things. He's almost obsessed with that. Now, knowing that I've heard him in, you know, behind the scenes conversations over the years talk about this over and over and over again, what does that tell you when Florida State's starting smaller guys? It's that those guys are the best options right now. That's the truth. So if there's anything that those guys, you know, instead of stooping or crouching when they walk to get on the field more, what they should be doing is, you know, trying to grow a beard or looking a little bit older, because the real issue is, again, like I was just saying, it's rare for a wide receiver to be ready early. It takes a while, and this is not a function of the Jimbo Fisher offense, people. I know some folks out there keep saying, you know, oh, well, you need a PhD in route running. You need to know the whole route tree to play it before Jimbo will let you on the field. That's not true. The issue isn't about a PhD in route running or anything else. The issue is that you have to be able to run precise enough routes that you're not causing turnovers. You have to be able to run good enough routes that you're able to get your head around to catch the ball when it's thrown on time, which, I mean, Francois doesn't throw as much on time. But again, that's what you have to do. You have to have a guy that's going to be where he's supposed to be with regularity. And That's not unique to the Jimbo Fisher offense. And this idea of, oh, well, you know, you have to know all the checks and all this other stuff, and there's so many options and all this that you have to know, that's also not really true. Florida State runs option routes more or less with the tight ends. They don't run a whole lot of option routes elsewhere. What they do, though, is that there are a number of route adjustments that need to be made, and there are rules that you have to know in order to play offensive football. But that's all pretty much standard for college football, and it has been since the early 90s. I mean, heck, in Mark Richt and Jeff Bowden's offense, which, you know, I remember people talking about Jeff Bowden's offense like it was a high school offense because it was so simple, and, you know, we didn't even need a playbook. But guess what? We had route adjustments that you had to learn. I mean, I had to learn that stuff, and it takes a little while to get comfortable with that and to learn that, okay, if they're middle of the field closed, then I break it this way as opposed to this way. Or, okay, if they're playing cover, if they're middle of the field closed, then that means I've got a guy, you know, bailing on me. If I see a corner bailing on me, then my corner route becomes a post out instead of a post corner. There are these little adjustments that you have to make. Or if I'm being pressed, or if a guy tries to get his hands on me before I hit my fifth step, then I need to turn this bench route, this out route, this six-step out route into a takeoff. These are all adjustments that I had to learn as a part of the Richt Jeff Bowden offense, and they're the same kinds of adjustments that are there in the Fisher offense. I mean, you got to remember, he's coming from the Bowden tree as well. This is all standard stuff. But it's stuff that it takes a little bit for a freshman wide receiver to get, because it's not the sort of thing you have in high school. In high school, these guys are so far and away the best athletes on the field that you basically just tell them to go out and, you know, well, go out and run a curl roughly, or, you know, go out and, you know, the high school that I'm coaching at right now, go out and run a dig. Well, the digs at the high school that I'm coaching at, sort of to my chagrin, are not something that ever would have flown when I played. Not certainly not in college. I mean, we've got some college level, we've got some Division I prospects at wide receiver, but these guys are all going to need a little bit of time because they've not learned how to run a dig route properly. I mean, they all start breaking their dig route at about 11 yards and they break it to about 14, and there's just no real understanding of how to run it with timing. And I'm working with these guys a bunch to get that. And it takes a while because you have to learn how to do it. You have to learn how to be patient on routes. And all of that stuff is true pretty much across the board. I mean, I talked I asked this question of Chris Brown from Smart Football. It's one of those things where, you know, just sort of bantering back and forth on this, saying, you know, people always talk about Fisher having all these various options and everything, but I mean, what college offenses don't? And he said, well, yeah, you do have one type of college offense that doesn't, and that's the true West Coast type offenses that have like super long plays and tons of super long play calls and tons of plays, because the only alternative to a number of route adjustments to accommodate to account for coverages, the only alternative to teaching route adjustments is teaching dozens of plays and, you know, extra plays. And Fisher has refused to do that. He won't have, you know, he's not going to run 100 pass plays. They run a pretty small group of pass concepts that he believes are base concepts that are important for them to be able to run. They run a pretty small number of base concepts, and then he teaches his guys to run those routes with the adjustments necessary. And you know, that's the thing that, you know, Chris Brown and I were going back and forth on a while back, is that, again, that's what Fisher chose to do. Some other places that are a little bit more focused on a more complex, you know, number of plays and things that players need to learn, then you don't have to learn as, you know, adjustments or whatever. But basically everybody does the former rather than the latter these days. So, you know, an air raid scheme, you have to learn all these various adjustments. I mean, even running something as simple as four vertical routes, you have to learn where to break it, where your landmark should be versus middle of the field open versus middle of the field closed. If this guy walls this way, then you have to adjust this way. There's all of those things that you have to learn, and it takes reps. And that's why if you look at other receivers around the country, you'll find out that it's not normal for even a four or five star, a top level wide receiver to contribute a bunch as a freshman. And even as sophomores, they tend to contribute a little bit here and there, but not a bunch. It's not normal. That's not the norm. It usually takes a full 2 to 3 years to develop a kid to be able to play college wide receiver, because you're taking athletes and you're turning them into guys that can run exact routes and run on time and all these things that it requires in any college offense. So if you think about, like, let's think about another good example. One of the other wide receivers that Florida State was recruiting last year, they thought was probably the number two receiver in the country, according to Florida State staff, and they really pushed for him, was Nate Craig Myers. He ended up going to Auburn. Auburn is in desperate need of a big wide receiver who can stretch the field. Nate Craig Myers is a big receiver who has the speed to be able to do some of those things. And, you know, Auburn's offense isn't exactly lighting the world on fire. You'd think that Nate Craig Myers would be out there just tearing it up. Nope, not at all. He's got two catches on the year, one versus Arkansas State, one versus Louisiana Monroe. Well, let's blame Lawrence Dossie for that, right? Clearly, that's a problem. You know, this is the thing that frustrates me. I mean, it's this idea that, oh, you know, all these other teams have their big receivers or their freshman receivers come out and dominate right away. No, that's not the norm. Let's look at last year's top 50, or let's go through the top 10, or let's say top 9 wide receivers in the country from 247 last year. Calvin Ridley was a 20-year-old freshman at Alabama, caught 75 balls. Well, he's 20, more, and also came out more polished than most, but he's a 20-year-old freshman. Okay. Deion Kane at Clemson got pushed in. He was not on the field until the second half, until the second half of the year, and he had a good year at 34 catches, and he's been an exception. You look at Clemson, they've had a couple exceptions. They had Nuke Hopkins and Sammy Watkins, both of whom were exceptions, but Martavis Bryant took 3 years. It took another one of their more talented guys, Sherrone Peak, 5 years to really make a major dent there. It's just the nature of the position. Even at Clemson, you know, where, you know, they've had a few and they've recruited really well at that position, nothing. Christian Kirk, early enrollee at Texas A&M. He's your big exception, but he's an early enrollee, 70 catches. The rest, Tyron Johnson, 9 catches. DeMarcus Lodge at Ole Miss, 1 catch. Preston Williams, Tennessee, 7 catches. Trent Irwin, Stanford, 11 catches. Daylon Chariot from Alabama, 2 catches. And I'll just skip the Florida State guys because you already know where they're at. Van Jefferson from Ole Miss, 0. Alex O'Deal from Oregon, 0. Juwan Johnson from Penn State, 0. Darius Slayton from Auburn, 0. John Burt from Texas, an exception with 24 catches. So it's rare for these guys to actually have significant contributions as freshmen. And even as sophomores, you see these guys not being quite ready usually to be the guy. So the reality is that the difference that we're seeing at Florida State, and the reason we're seeing these Smurf guys out there, the Smurfs are out there because they're older, because they're juniors and seniors. And the reason that those guys are the guys left is because some of the bigger guys that Florida State signed, if you look at who Florida State signed, the real problem with who's on the field right now has nothing to do with preference or Jimbo Fisher being stubborn about playing taller guys or whatever, or even younger guys. The issue is that in the 2012 class, FSU only signed one wide receiver, and it was track star Marvin Bracey. And that was partly because they were able to sign a couple top guys in that 2011 class, and so you know they weren't able really to attract the bigger guys that they pursued in 2012. They went after some big ones and just didn't land them. Then in 2013, they got Isaiah Jones. He was the big guy. And then they got Bobo Wilson, who was, you know, they were looking at him as an athlete, maybe going to put him at corner, but he wound up finding a home at receiver. And then then Kermit Whitfield, he was another world-class guy that they're looking at, especially once Bracey was going to go, looking at as a guy that would be a world-class track guy for returners. No complaints about that. But then Isaiah Jones is gone. So that means in two cycles, despite targeting a bunch of tall guys through those cycles, they didn't really land any except for Isaiah Jones, and then he got dismissed. So those are the guys that would be seniors or juniors the last couple of years, and they're gone. All you got is really Bobo and Kermit. And then in 2014, you had Travis Rudolph, who was the one true receiver prospect out of that group. Ermin Lane, who was more of a big athlete and never really caught on and struggled to catch the ball at receiver. And Javon Pig Harrison, who spent 2 years hurt, and now he's no longer with the team. So in three cycles, you wound up really with the two Smurfs and Travis Rudolph as the options. And they finally were able to go to land some bigger guys in the next class, where they signed George Whitfield, they signed Phillips, and then they signed Auden Tate to finally replace those guys in the next class. And that's why we're starting to see more Auden Tate, who is way ahead of schedule. I mean, he was a raw recruit. And again, normally those guys don't contribute immediately as sophomores, but he's already, I mean, he's got four touchdown catches as a sophomore already at the halfway point, and is on the field the majority of the snaps right now. I mean, he's playing somewhere around, 50-60% of the snaps, and even more than that. And, he's always on the field and four wide. So, they're getting the bigger guys on the field as fast as they can, because that's what they're trying to push. They're trying to get them out there. In any case, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next question. This is a little bit of a hobby horse at this point, but we've got Chad at First Up Stables. Says, with the ACC getting tougher, does it make sense for FSU to tone down the out-of-conference scheduling? Yes, it does. In fact, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to play Ole Miss at the beginning of this year, and I think it really hurt Florida State to not be able to do some of the mixing and matching and things that they needed to be able to do in a couple of warm-up games before things got tough, that could have had that defense and that offense getting a little bit more adjusted and getting guys in positions where they were more comfortable and where they knew what they could do before they had to play at a place like Louisville in a team that was a little bit more established and was a little more experienced. That hurt this team. And the opening schedule hurt this team. And there's not much reason to do that, given that you've got Florida. They just need one significant out-of-conference game outside of that, and they need to tone down here and there. And I think that they'll probably wind up doing that some, although next year they open with Alabama. So, that's certainly not toning it down. Jabari, that's at Bari at _3J, asks, do you expect the defense to play well against Clemson? Charles Kelly has done a good job containing Clemson the last 2 years. You know, I do think that the defense will probably exceed most people's expectations against Clemson. With Derwin James not on the field, it's going to be a lot tougher task than it was last year because, again, last year, much like they could against Jackson and Louisville, if you've got Derwin, you can just shadow those guys and take their legs out of the game. FSU doesn't really have a guy that can do that on the roster now, although with Lane at safety, they may be able to do a little bit more of that with Trey Marshall. It's going to be interesting to see what they do because Clemson will take advantage of you if you can only play man, and so far that's what they've basically been doing. But if they play man with a robber to take away some of that stuff in the middle of the field and to try to eliminate us, and they banjo and try to eliminate some of the switch routes and things, they may be able to do it. You know, if you put, say, Trey Marshall or somebody in that robber role who can run, then maybe you can do that. I'll be interested to see what they do and what they scheme up against Clemson. They've had a really good plan the last couple of years. Doke Dynasty, at Doke Dynasty, asks, if LSU is still interested in Jimbo after this year, assuming we lose to Clemson and one more, does he bolt for greener pastures? Only person who knows that for sure is Jimbo Fisher, but I don't think so. I think Fisher is going to stay at Florida State. I don't think he's going anywhere. Joseph Ryder, that's at THX2001R, asks, why is Patrick on the bench so much? That's a good question. I covered that in the beginning part of this podcast. I'm baffled there. I wish I knew. I think he should be on the field a little bit more. And that's one of my real complaints about the offense at this point in the season. Draymond Reddington asks, some have argued that this isn't a young team. I think if we look at the board, the talent levels across the board, it is. Thoughts? I really think it is a very young team. You look at where the majority of the talent is, and the major talent is in the junior, sophomore, and freshman classes, and mostly in the sophomore and freshman classes. That 2013 recruiting class was really a big problem for Florida State, and that was the class where all those coaches left that year right before the national championship. Jeremy Pruitt, everybody else, all those guys came in, but they had to salvage that class, and they didn't land. That was not a good class. The 2012 class was an amazing class, and that's part of why that 2013 class was a little bit disappointing. But that 2013 class, yes, you had Jalen Ramsey, yes, you had Matthew Thomas, but Matthew Thomas didn't get on the field until this year. But other than that, they really didn't have a whole lot of players. I mean, you look down that list of the 2013 class. And those guys should be the seniors on this class, the seniors and redshirt juniors. And the 2013 class was just a disaster for Florida State. It was the first real miss for Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. I mean, you go down the list of the 2013 class. Let's go ahead and do this. You got Matthew Thomas and Jalen Ramsey. Ramsey was obviously an amazing recruit. But then you got Matthew Thomas, who only got on the field this year. I mean, he's basically playing as a freshman now. DeMarcus Walker, he's been great for the program. Ryan Green, really first year out there, and he's a backup. Ira Denson, EJ Levenberry, Keith Bryant, Isaiah Jones, Kermit Whitfield, Marquez White, Freddie Stevenson, Roderick Hoskins, Tyrell Lyons, Bobo Wilson, Richie Kleepall, Ryan Hofeld, Nate Andrews, Wilson Bell, John Franklin III, Jeremy Kerr, Desmond Holland, and DeVaris Bryant. That's your 21. That's your 22 enrollees from that 2013 class. There are a lot of misses on that group in that list, and there's a lot of key misses at key positions in that list. And so, you know, that has been a big factor. And then even then, the next year, we're now starting to see that 2014 class starting to step up and take control. But those are your redshirt sophomores and your juniors. And so there's still guys you expect to come around. And even in that class, though, you start going down the list and you see Kane Daub. You see Delvin Purifoy, Chad Mavetti, Lorenzo Featherston, J.J. Cosentino. I mean, there's a lot of misses in this group as well, or guys that got hurt or whatever. Malik Jackson, Ethan Frith, who then ended up gray shirting. There's guys in this that those two classes back to back are why Florida State has had some of the trouble that it's had the last couple years. And yes, The 2015 and 2016 classes were both better than the 2013 and 2014 classes, and that's why. Next question, at King Kramer 3 asks, were we a year early on a national title run? I think we were. Florida State's not in it. Although, here's the thing, we might only wind up, if Florida State, let's say Florida State beats Clemson, which is possible. We might not have been a year early, we might have been a field goal away from seeing that happen. And honestly, if Derwin James doesn't get hurt, Florida State probably beats that North Carolina team and is in a real competitive position to make a national title run even this year. So I'm not sure we were early. I just think this year has not gone as it might have had Derwin James stayed healthy, had maybe they not started with Ole Miss and Louisville as the first two FBS games. Good question. Django Nolhart asks, if James is 100%, do we go back to zone versus Clemson to stop Watson running, or is Mike Williams versus McFadden a matchup we like? First of all, they wouldn't go completely back to zone, but they'd go back to some, and James isn't going to be 100%, so that's a little bit moot. I do think that they're going to try to get McFadden on Mike Williams, and you know we're going to see some wins and losses there one way or another. But I think at this point, they can't just go zone against Clemson because they don't play it well enough. Larry Davidson asks, Jacques Patrick, more to the point, what's the thought process on running back rotation or lack thereof? Well, you know, I agree. Again, dealt with it a couple times. Hard to deal with. Django Nolhart follows up. How good is Watson reading defenses pre-snap? He's gotten quite good at it. And, you know, the one thing that is a saving grace is that his mechanics haven't been great this year. I think they've fallen off a little bit since the Chad left there. And he's not been as accurate, which has been helpful. But, you know, who knows? He may come out of the bye just, you know, spinning the pill and putting it in its spots. And of course, that would be Florida State's luck there. Dakota Moyer asks, what passing concepts could Jimbo implement into this offense to make it more freshman friendly? I think the first concept would be to make sure that he gets 20-year-old freshmen like Calvin Ridley. That would definitely make it more freshman friendly. Other than that, it's hard to say that there would be a bunch that would make the offense more freshman friendly. I think maybe throwing a little bit more vertical, a few more vertical routes and doing a little bit more back shoulder type stuff. Is the one thing that might give certain guys a chance. But, you know, Fisher's the real issue for Fisher there is if you've got a guy that only does one thing well, when you put him on the field, they know that's what he's doing. I mean, that's something he's talked about in the past with me is, you know, I can't just put that guy out there because as soon as you put him out there, they know, they start yelling, oh, it's this. Well, that means that whatever he does well is the thing that they're going to take away. So he has to be good at least two or three things in order to make him worth playing. And until a freshman is able to do those two or three things, you have to be able to run, you know, two or three routes to be a viable player. That's what you have to do. You have to be a threat at more than one thing. So I don't know that there's a whole lot that he could implement to make it freshman friendly. You know, maybe a little bit more in terms of RPO type stuff, in terms of your quote unquote replacement routes, your slants and things like that on RPOs. But that takes so many reps and that takes so much rhythm to be able to run that even there, it's not exactly freshman friendly because you have to be so much in the right spot to run that stuff. So I don't think there's a whole lot really that they can do to just really make it freshman friendly. It's just that freshman wide receivers, just they're not going to be, they're not, if you're playing freshman receivers, it's because you don't have veteran receivers that are any good, or you have a freak, an intellectual freak, like a Sammy Watkins or a Nuke Hopkins, guys who are super smart, who can pick stuff up and are able, mature enough to be able to be in that right spot all the time. And that's so rare. It's just so rare. Last couple here, last few. Matt Musey asks, I still think we need to use more two running back out of the shotgun. We seem to pass block out of that unit better than two tight end. Thing is, the two tight end sets are some of the best things Florida State's running right now because of the growth of Maven Saunders. And FSU is able to stretch the field more with those guys because of their size up the seams than they are with anything else. And that's why those guys are out there, and it gives them more balance, which I think is the key. Let's see. And last one, will our current defensive scheme be effective against Clemson due to their mobile quarterback? Short answer is nothing is going to be successful against Clemson if it's not executed well. I think, again, they can play, like I said earlier, they can play some robber-type stuff that gives you both some insulation over the middle and somebody with his eyes on the quarterback. Other than doing that, they've got to have somebody with their eyes on the quarterback. I think they can be successful against Clemson, though, particularly if they're able to win on the inside with Derek Nnadi, with those guys being a little better on the inside. If they're able to do that, Clemson's had trouble when they've not been able to run the football this year. And if they can stop the run, that's going to be an interesting game. But that's getting into next week's stuff. It's about time to go ahead and wrap this podcast up. Once again, if you have been enjoying this podcast, please give us lots of five-star effusive ratings on iTunes. Helps us a bunch. You can also follow me yet again on Twitter at Doc Staples. Participate on our page on Facebook, The Unconquered Podcast. Once again, I'm Jason Staples. This has been The Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, the Sporto Channel. Thanks for listening.
I made this.